We'll hear arguments first this morning in Hayfield Northern Railroad Company against the Chicago and Northwestern Transportation Company. Mr. Abdalian.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. This is an appeal from a decision holding that Section 10905 of the Interstate Commerce Act preempts Minnesota condemnation law when that law is applied to property which has been abandoned with ICC approval after the ICC has relinquished all jurisdiction and interest in that line, and where a statutorily authorized Minnesota Public Service Corporation seeks to take that line by eminent domain in order to restore rail service to a rural Minnesota community.
Counsel, just what is now at issue in the case? The rails are gone, aren't they?
That's correct. There's still land and right-of-way to take, Justice Blackmun, and there's also a bond at issue.
Do your people propose to put down new rails?
That's correct. That is correct. The legal issue before this court has been well defined by the Court of Appeals. The factual context in which this case comes to this court is uncomplicated. CNW, the appellee, applied to abandon a line of rail that ran from Iowa to Minnesota. Part of that line is a 19.2-mile segment that lies totally within Minnesota, which has been referred to in all briefs as the Hayfield segment. The abandonment was contested by a shippers group. The abandonment, the challenge to the abandonment was unsuccessful. The abandonment also was challenged by a shippers group in a way that the line could avoid abandonment through a procedure within the Commerce Act itself to subsidize the line, to keep that line in interstate commerce. The shippers group made an offer of subsidy to continue the line in rail service, and that subsidy offer was not accepted, and the Interstate Commerce Commission set a subsidy amount. The shippers group withdrew their offer of subsidy, and the shippers group disbanded. Several months later, the abandonment became final in December of 1981. Several months later, the Hayfield Northern was formed, the Minnesota Public Service Corporation, with the delegated power of eminent domain to condemn right-of-way and track for rail use. Upon the founding of the Hayfield Northern, the Hayfield Northern immediately sought a temporary restraining order in state court in order to keep the line intact, as the appellee had already commenced procedures to dismantle the track. The TRO was granted by the state court after a hearing. The CNW then removed this case to federal district court. The federal district court dismissed the action with prejudice and dissolved the injunction. An appeal was immediately taken to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals stayed the order of the district court upon the posting of a bond. The Court of Appeals affirmed the district court. There are two issues that I wish to emphasize this morning. That is the difference between pre-abandonment and post-abandonment matters, and that Section 10905 is not the exclusive method in which to transfer property. It is common ground in this case, and all parties agree, that if the state of Minnesota or the Hayfield Northern or any other entity would take any action that would affect a common carrier status as a common carrier, that would be in conflict with the Commerce Act. However, by the act of abandonment, the railroad being certified abandoned, the CNW, that points to the end of Interstate Commerce Commission jurisdiction and federal interest. That, and at the point of consummation, no longer do we have anything of federal interest. It's a matter of federal indifference, and state power can be exercised on that line, including the power of eminent domain. If the decision of the Eighth Circuit, if allowed to stand, allows a gap in sovereignty to occur, this line of rail is not subject to state power or to federal power or federal interest, and it just exists out there. There's a gap. It's a no man's land, creating a void. The Commerce Commission itself has held repeatedly in public rulings that once the certificate of abandonment has issued, that is the end of federal interest. And the questions of Title II and disposition of rail property are a matter of state power, matter of the reserve powers of the states. The decision of the Court of Appeals has thus changed what was considered to be the law by the Interstate Commerce Commission itself, the agency that is in charge of enforcing the Interstate Commerce Act. The Court of Appeals found that Section 10905, because there is a provision in which rail property can be transferred, whether that be by subsidy or acquisition, and that the Commerce Commission could set a price, that somehow that this became the exclusive and only method. But the Act itself speaks, Section 10905, speaks to matters that all happened before abandonment, before the abandonment has been consummated. And the title of the Act is in particularly instructive, as it speaks of methods of avoiding abandonment and avoidance of abandonment. The Court of Appeals looked at it as the exclusive method to transfer property for continued rail service in connection with an abandonment. While that's true, it would be more accurate to say in avoidance of abandonment, and that once the abandonment is final, then there is no longer any federal interest that exists, that the states are free to is free to exercise its power. There is no reason to subordinate a state interest at that time to that of a private carrier, as there is no federal interest, and the Solicitor General has filed a brief saying that there is no programmatic interest of the United States that would be adversely affected by the exercise of eminent domain on this line of rail. It's consistent.
Are you saying, Counsel, that after the Commission has acted, as it has here, and there's nothing in the case except some real estate with some iron rails resting on it? Is that it?
That's correct.
It isn't a carrier anymore.
Excuse me?
It's not a carrier anymore.
That's correct. If by the act of abandonment, it loses its character as interstate rail property, it's no longer in interstate commerce. It becomes ordinary, mere property, subject to the laws of Minnesota, just like any other property or any other property owner. To use the fact that it once was rail property, interstate commerce, to shield itself from condemnation is unprincipled. The Court of Appeals found that the very tight time constraints that this transfer subsidy pursuant to Section 10905 would somehow be lost by a state condemnation, because you would have protracted condemnation proceedings. But the 110-day period in which the Commission will set a price and a transfer to property would take place is not at all affected by the state condemnation. That 110-day period will come and to an end, and that is the end of the federal jurisdiction. It's come to an end, and the railroad is able to abandon that property, and that's all that the Commission can, that's the extent of the Commission's authority. It has the permissive power to permit the abandonment if the public convenience and necessity permits. There's no other no other power. The commission has not stated by giving the certificate of abandonment that the railroad is entitled to those assets after the certificate issues in any set of circumstances, or that the state power of eminent domain is going to be subordinated to that of the private carrier. Once the certificate issues, it's an end, and that's consistent with federal policy also, to bring the states to the forefront of restoring rail service. We are not, the Hayfield Northern is not attempting to continue rail service on this line. Rail service cannot be continued, which it would be under 10905. That 10905 is a method in which the rail line can continue in service. Here, service has been discontinued. The community has lost its service, and now a state condemnation wishes not to continue it, but to recommence and restore rail service on that line.
Starting rail service, if you win this case, I have to get another certificate from the ICC?
That's correct. A certificate of public convenience and necessity, and we would have to, and the...
Even though just a short while ago, the commission authorized the abandonment of the line.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. You'd have to apply a new under Section 10901 of the Commerce Act and show that the public convenience and necessity permits this line to be.
Would you be litigating the same issues that were litigated in the abandonment proceeding?
No, not at all. Because abandonment is only permissive. The commission has not made an affirmative finding. The abandonment proceeding.
Well,
did it find
that the public interest and necessity did not require the.
That's correct.
The railroad?
That's right. It's required to prevent the abandonment and to
but now
restore.
It'll have to find that the public interest and necessity requires that it be started again.
Not required, but permits, mm-hmm. which is an easier standard under the Act. The local interest in this line, the abandonment itself, the Interstate Commerce Commission goes through a balance, balancing the interest of the private carrier and interstate commerce generally on the one hand, and that of the public, the local community, and the on the other hand.
After the abandonment, can the carrier sell the property to you?
The carrier can sell the property if a state interest doesn't surface.
Does it need ICC approval?
It does not need ICC approval to. Once the certificate issues, it's a matter of ICC indifference. The rail line is taken off the carrier's book for interstate commerce matters. It's the end of federal jurisdiction. And to find a conflict between state and federal law where there's no federal interest.
Did your client make any effort to buy the property from the carrier?
No, not at all. There was a shippers group that opposed the abandonment for substantive reasons, and then there was a shippers group that sought to have the line avoid abandonment through the vehicle of running the railroad on a subsidized basis.
Suppose, as part of the balance that you spoke of, that the commission arrives at, it was proposed by the railroad and approved by the ICC that the rails were going to be taken up and used at another segment of the carrier, and that was in contemplation. What about that, just about the rails? Would they then be subject to condemnation?
If the Interstate Commerce Commission conditioned the abandonment on the CNW's taking its rail lines and taking it from
one
Hayfield someplace else because interstate commerce interests required that, mm-hmm. That would be a different case.
That's
would be
not
the
this
Kalo,
one.
That's not this case.
Okay.
And that would be an interference with
yes.
the commission's order, where this does not interfere with any order of the commission at all.
Is Hayfield in any different position from a brand new carrier that wants to, corporation that wants to start a railroad?
No, it is not. No, it is not.
Mr. Abdullian, did the same shippers group, which had applied under the Staggers Act proceeding to acquire the proposed abandoned line, form the Hayfield Northern Railroad Company? Is it the same group, essentially?
No, it's not. There were two shippers group. One was made up of 12, I believe, shippers that contested the abandonment and substantive ground. The second group of seven that decided to subsidize it. And this is a separate legal entity, a Minnesota Public Service Corporation, that seeks to restore rail service, which is quite different than what the both of the other two groups that sought to accomplish.
Is there any reason to think that the value placed on the property will be different under the state condemnation proceeding than it was under the proceeding under this before the ICC?
The state condemnation proceeding is constrained by fair market value. And we have, since the ICC valuation, we've had intervening events, but the carrier is entitled to fair market value and just compensation under Minnesota condemnation law, of course, must be because of...
Well, is that likely to differ substantially from the value placed in the ICC proceeding?
It could differ, but the state court would apply state condemnation principles, and whether that would be different or not, I don't know. I mean, it would depend on record evidence at the time of the state condemnation. I would like to reserve the rest of rebuttal.
Very well. Mr. Levy.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, let me briefly summarize the position of the United States in this case and then turn to the issue of opportunity costs that Appellee has raised in its brief. Our submission is that Section 10905 does not preempt the state's condemnation of a rail line that has been abandoned with the approval of the Interstate Commerce Commission. ICC authority over abandonments extends up to but not beyond the point that the abandonment has become effective and the line is no longer a common carrier in interstate rail system. Section 10905 is part of the federal regulation of carriers in interstate commerce. It pertains to pre-abandonment offers of financial assistance and provides an alternative to abandonment in order to furnish continued and uninterrupted service on the line. Moreover, the time limits in Section 10905 were intended to expedite the abandonment process of the ICC in order to alleviate the burden on the carrier of providing service until the effective date of the abandonment, which is postponed during the pendency of the Section 10905 offer. Once ICC abandonment approval takes effect, the carrier is free of its federal obligation to maintain service, and it can then abandon the line. At that point, the railroad has obtained what the ICC authorized. Its federal service obligation is eliminated, and it is relieved of its federal common carrier duties. A subsequent state condemnation proceeding to initiate new service pursuant to a fresh ICC certificate of public convenience and necessity would not interfere with the authorized abandonment or be contrary to the federal policy of expediting abandonments in order to reduce the burden that federal service requirements impose on carriers seeking to abandon a line. And Section 10905 affords no basis whatever to distinguish between former rail property and all other private property in the state that is subject to the traditional power of condemnation. Now, the railroad makes an argument in its brief based on so-called opportunity costs. In an abandonment proceeding, one of the factors considered by the ICC is that federal service requirements keep a railroad from using its resources in other, more profitable ways. This relative economic disadvantage or loss is the opportunity cost that the railroad incurs in connection with the line it seeks to abandon. Appellee contends that a state's post-abandonment condemnation, and especially preliminary injunctive relief incident to that condemnation, restricts the railroad's reuse of its track and equipment, and thus imposes on the railroad the same opportunity cost that the ICC considered in granting the abandonment in the first place. However, the ICC's abandonment approval only determined that, in balancing the competing considerations for and against abandonment under the public convenience and necessity standard, the need for this service did not justify the costs, including the opportunity costs, that such service would impose on the carrier.
How long do those opportunity costs run? Forever?
I believe that the Commission's determination is essentially retrospective or contemporaneous. It determines that the current requirements are presently keeping the railroad from using its assets in more productive ways.
That still be true 10 years from now?
If there were a federal service requirement that required the service, the railroad to maintain the service and therefore prohibited its reuse.
This particular property, if there is an opportunity, how long will that exist?
It would exist up to the time that the ICC's abandonment certificate takes effect.
Well, that's over.
And that's over. That's correct.
So it doesn't exist.
That's correct. The opportunity cost is only a consideration in conjunction with state law. Federal law. The ICC determined, and all that it determined, is that federal law does not require the imposition of these costs on the carrier. This determination that local service needs do not outweigh the burdens on the carrier, and thus that abandonment may occur, simply does not address the question whether the carrier can be required to leave its track and equipment in place for independent reasons of state law. The ICC has authority over entry into, exit from, and operations in the interstate rail system. It does not have authority, let alone exclusive authority, over post-abandonment transfers of property that were at one time used in rail service. The ICC's abandonment approval does not establish an affirmative federal right in a railroad to avoid state law that would restrict its reuse of its assets of what formerly were rail property, and such state law does not interfere with the abandonment authorized by the Commission.
Are you saying, Mr. Levy, that at the present time, once the ICC has acted and there is no longer a railroad, that the Minnesota Railroad and Warehouse Commission would have no authority to tell them they must run an intrastate line?
Well, their intrastate lines are subject to the jurisdiction of the ICC.
Could they? Yes, subject to the... But could the Minnesota Railroad and Warehouse Commission have any authority at all with respect to ordering the continuance of this line?
No, it couldn't. That is the exclusive authority of the ICC. Now, it may be said...
Can I ask one question? Would the ICC have the authority to condition the abandonment on transfer of the rails to another location?
I think there's no question that it would have the authority if it found such a condition to be necessary or appropriate to the interest of the interstate rail
system.
Part of
its balance of why it was willing to allow the abandonment.
That's exactly right.
Does it ever
right.
do that? Do you?
I'm not aware of any instance where it can be definitively said that the Commission did it. It may have done it in the Boston and Maine case that is cited in our brief. That involved an insolvent carrier, and the Court of Appeals' description of the ICC's order suggests that the commission did condition the abandonment on the ability of the...
It's still pending in the Second Circuit.
I wasn't aware of that. This decision
it's
that I'm referring to...
It's been pending there for 20 years.
I think this was a First Circuit decision that is long since over. If the case is still pending, I don't think that bears on this point. But the Boston and Maine is the closest case, if there's one at all. But that would be a much different case. That would be an exercise of the commission's authority prior to abandonment. And the statute expressly authorizes in Section 10903B1 the commission to impose conditions on abandonment. And in such a case, there would be an actual conflict between the state's condemnation proceeding and the order of the Commerce Commission and the federal interest that underlies it.
Mr. Levy, you've mentioned equipment several times. Is equipment at issue in this case?
I mean that only in the generic sense.
Only the rail and real estate.
I'm sorry?
Only the land and the rail, which I suppose must be viewed as a fixture, are at issue.
I think that's right, although I can't say authoritatively that there may not be some incidental pieces of property used in connection with the track that are issued. We would not distinguish between them. Thank you.
Ms. Keating?
You. Why the railroad is opposing this? The railroad wanted to abandon this line.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. Your Honor, we feel that Congress, in enacting Section 10905 of the Staggers Rail Act, balanced several interests. It balanced the financial condition of the railroad industry. Congress had found that the railroad industry by 1985 would have a $16 to $20 billion capital shortfall. It found that the railroad industry had the lowest earnings of any of the transportation modes in the United States. So there was a balancing of interests of the railroad versus an ability on the part of the local communities via Section 10905 to acquire via for sale or condemnation.
I quite understand why the railroad would wish to abandon a line on which it was losing a lot of money. But now that the line has been abandoned at the request of the railroad, why do you object to it being sold to somebody else?
Well, Your Honor, we believe, first of all, I should preface that it has been in the previous indications in the record that the principals and incorporators of the Hayfield Northern Railroad, the appellant, were members of this Minnesota Shippers Group that invoked Section 10905 before the commission.
But wouldn't you like to keep the shippers shipping on a feeder line? Wouldn't that help your railroad in the end?
Your Honor, in the meantime of... when we received abandonment authority, at that point, the finding is put into the Federal Register. Simultaneously, there's a notice that says anyone interested in offering to subsidize or purchase the line should do so within 10 days. These are the Section 10905 proceedings.
Well,
the principals and incorporators of the Hayfield Northern invoked Section 10905, had the commission set the price, and they chose to not appeal that valuation. Then they chose to wait till the certificate of abandonment issued and then come back into state court, basically subverting the federal agency final decision rather than taking it to an
appellate
court.
Are you saying you're afraid you'll get a lower price under state condemnation?
Your Honor, that is a possibility. But in the meantime, we believe this entire proceedings is a good indication of the congressional intent in enacting Section 10905. The legislative history suggests it was a balancing between allowing the sincere efforts of shippers to acquire property, but at the same time,
What has your client got to lose specifically?
Your Honor, in the meantime, from receiving our final abandonment certificate, which was in November.
You've received that?
Yes, sir. In March of that year, which is the earliest you can get out to do some construction work in Minnesota, we were up to salvage the line. In the meantime, we had, in reliance on our final abandonment certificate, had entered into contracts with the state of Iowa and other shippers to upgrade major grain hauling lines with that rail. The particular rail that was in the segment of the Hayfield segment was particularly heavy-duty rail, which was susceptible to being used elsewhere. So we had committed that to upgrade our tracks elsewhere. The 115-pound rail, which was in this segment, if put into the state projects in Iowa, where there were slow orders of 10 to 15 miles an hour, we would be able to get the speed up on those major grain hauling lines. And this kind of commitment to reuse our assets is very important to the railroad. At the time of this proceedings, we had a $21 million capital deficit as to working capital deficit, and as a result, this kind of reuse of our materials to better use it for elsewhere for the general shipping public, we feel is very important.
So as of now, you have used it elsewhere.
Yes, sir.
In this case.
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. We have, but we had a considerable delay as a result of these proceedings, and the legislative history of Section 10905 suggests that this is exactly the type of protracted legal proceedings that we can get involved in, and as a result, not be able to reuse our materials. The federal courts, as well as the commission, have indicated that there is an opportunity cost associated with not being able to use your assets to the best of your ability.
You're talking only about the rail, aren't you?
In this particular situation, Your Honor, it was 115-pound rail, which was very reusable, although in the specific finding of the commission, they determined 95% of all the rail on the whole line was reusable, and there was over 200,000 ties that were reusable. But given the financial condition of the rail industry, this ability to reuse materials on lines that have not been used or are underutilized is very important in terms of being able to provide better service elsewhere on our system.
Well, why wasn't that all taken up in ICC when the abandonment was there?
Your Honor, we submit that Section 1.
I get the impression that somebody made a mistake in the abandonment, namely the railroad.
Well, Your Honor, we believe in
the. Did you make a mistake?
No, I don't believe, Your Honor. We felt we could rely on the final commission decision authorizing the abandonment. The administrative law judge stated in his decision that the railroad had shown a need for reusable materials elsewhere on the system, and except for someone acquiring it under the provisions provided by Congress under 10905, we felt we could rely on that final decision and then be free to reuse our materials elsewhere.
But if you get in the condemnation the fair value of the rails, why don't you come out even?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the Eighth Circuit has indicated that there's the delay that could be caused, because we have to remember that in this situation, though the Hayfield Northern obtained its temporary restraining order in April of 1982, it has yet to file a condemnation action. This kind of delay in terms of having our assets remain unproductive could cause the railroad considerable.
Isn't that covered by the bond?
Your Honor, we had in the state
you
court.
You have a lawsuit on the bond if you win, don't you?
We had in the state court a $2,000 bond and a $100,000 bond that was issued in the Eighth Circuit for property that was valued at the commission at $1.7
million. Yes, but if you ultimately win, you would get the property. You just get the damage for delay.
There is, in this particular instance, there was the temporary restraining order, but in condemnation actions, per se, there is not necessarily an indication that we would get anything more than our costs for our defending ourselves in these perhaps numerous condemnation actions in the various counties that the line might go through.
Well, the rail is gone, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
So the condemnation action isn't going to condemn the rail, is it?
At this point, Your Honor, the major controversy I expect would be the injunction and the damage, whether the injunction was proper to begin with and whether or not there's damages that should be available for the railroad as a result of the delay.
But you're going to keep the rail anyway, in any event.
The rail has been reused.
But the state still wants to condemn whatever is there, I take it. Is that right?
That was what counsel for appellant has indicated, Your Honor.
And is there any reason why the Northwestern, after the line has been abandoned, should be immune from the vicissitudes of state condemnation actions like delay that every other property owner in Minnesota is subjected to?
Well, we believe that The federal system that was created under 10905 is a separate and a unique system, and that is the exclusive method for continued rail service. And they have indicated in the memorandum of law that was submitted to the state court in obtaining its temporary restraining order that it was for continued rail purposes, that they wanted it and they wanted to prevent us from removing our track. And so we're saying that this is a subterfuge of, or a circumvention of the federal orders, which they had an opportunity or a day in court, so to speak.
But and go ahead, Bill.
What if Hayfield had made its move 3 years after the abandonment certificate, and the Northwestern was just doing nothing with its rails? Would the case be any different in your view?
Well, Your Honor, in the history of our abandonments, and we've, in the last 15 years, had several thousand miles of abandonments, we have always attempted to remove our materials as quickly as possible, so I don't think we'd get into that situation where it would be 3 years down the line. I think that hypothetical would indicate that we would act contrary to our best economic interests. The opportunity costs associated with keeping the rail assets idle, as determined by the commission in this particular segment, was around $180,000 a year. And as the facts before the Eighth Circuit were indicated, we, as soon as possible, were there to try to remove our tracks. And
it's part of your case right now that the right-of-way, you still own some real estate, don't you?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
Is part of your case that Minnesota may not condemn or that Hayfield may not condemn the right-of-way?
Well, I think...
Isn't that a yes or no case? Answer? No. Are you claiming that your right-of-way, your real estate, after the track's all off, is not subject to condemnation?
We're talking about an intact rail line that is... Well, the procedure of 10905, so I would say
there isn't
no.
The railroad is not in, that rail line is not intact now.
I agree with you, Your Honor.
The rail is off and the ties are gone. So is that piece of real estate subject to condemnation or not?
It would be subject to condemnation. It would be a different issue in terms of not being preemption, but those same parties were before the commission, and rather than taking their final appeals as to the valuation.
I know, but again, would you say, suppose as this case developed, no move was made until your rails were all gone, your ties were all gone, and all that was there was a piece of real estate. And then Hayfield was organized and sought to condemn that right-of-way. Now, would you have come in defense and said preemption?
No, Your Honor, because Section 109...
So the answer is no.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. How is this land on which the rails formerly rested any different from the farms on either side of the right-of-way? I assume there are a lot of farms in that part of the state. How is it any different now?
At this point in time, Your Honor, except for the fact that it had been a prior abandonment... had been a prior railroad right-of-way, there wouldn't be any difference. But when the proceeding was instituted and was before the Eighth Circuit, it was an intact rail line, and that is where the preemption issue, which we are concerned with here today, was focused. It was at that point an intact rail line, and at that point there was an exclusive method in the federal law to provide for local communities to be able to acquire via for sale or subsidy an intact rail line. This state method acts as a direct conflict to that federal method.
Well, if we rule against your position, will it go back and be litigated on the question of whether your client has violated the injunction or something? What will it go back on? If you don't dispute that they can acquire the roadbed for the railroad.
The injunction was as a result of the Eighth Circuit deciding there was a delay caused by the Hayfield Northern
and it was basically on the preemption issue, which was before the court. At that time, it was an intact rail line.
Well, and the track was removed after the injunction issued.
Yes, Your Honor, when the mandate issued from the Circuit Court of Appeals, the Hayfield Northern requested that there be a rehearing in bank and also a rehearing, and they were denied. And it was, I believe it was Justice Blackmun and other members of the court where they also requested a stay, and that was denied.
Well, so what would be litigated? The whether Chicago and Northwestern Transportation Company violated the injunction?
No, at that point there was not an injunction on us, Your Honor. At that point, the injunction via the Eighth Circuit's order had been.
You violated no rule by moving the tracks.
No, you're.
And
yes.
The real question is whether the other side has to pay you. If the other side wins and you lose, then you're not going to get any damages under the injunction.
Yes,
on
Mr.
the
Justice.
Bond.
Yes, Mr. Justice.
And the case will just be over.
I guess that's correct, yes, Your Honor.
May I ask, because I'm a little fuzzy on the facts, the abandonment order, as I understand, was entered in late 1981. When actually were the rails removed?
Your Honor, the railroad instituted its salvaging process of the line in March of 1982 as it was attempting to remove the rail and the assets to attempt to use
and
it
did
elsewhere.
Did it go forward from March of 82 just as promptly as it normally would? In the
we were stopped the day that we were up at Hayfield to attempt to remove that property because the Hayfield Northern, the principals and incorporators who had been this Minnesota Shippers Group, incorporated themselves as the Hayfield Northern, went into state court, got a temporary restraining order, and from that point on we were not able to remove our property. And it sat idle until the mandate of the Eighth Circuit issued February of 83.
So you were really held up for about a year, is what it amounted to.
Yes.
And then after February 83, you did go ahead and
move the was the injunction, did you say that the injunction issued by the district court, and that was against you and in favor of Hayfield, the injunction, I take it?
Yes.
Was that stayed by the Court of Appeals before the disposition of the merits of the case in the Court of Appeals?
There was a hearing as to whether or not the district court dismissed the case. We had removed it to the district court. It dismissed it based on the preemption of Section 10905.
And dissolved the injunction.
However, in the meantime, the Hayfield Northern had gone to the Eighth Circuit, and there was a hearing on whether or not a bond should be set. And at that point, they set a bond, and the injunction came back into force. So it basically was there was continuity there in terms of an injunction, basically. The
and the injunction enjoined you from removing your property.
From disposing, selling, reusing any of the assets, and that remained in force until the mandate of the Eighth Circuit issued.
So since the bond issue is still in the case, we're really judging it just as though the track had never been removed up till this date, whether or not the
because if the injunction is
whether we judge it just as though the track was still there, and the question is whether the track is subject to condemnation.
Yes, Your Honor. If the injunction was properly issued, then the bond, we would not be able to have damages on the bond, and that would be basically the question of preemption and collateral attack that we had submitted to the district court in the Eighth Circuit below.
As a practical matter, your position is, I gather, that the abandonment order requires everybody to allow you a reasonable time to remove the rails. If you had that time, you wouldn't care what happened after that.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that there's an exclusive method that has been added to the abandonment process, and that's Section 10905, which
normally would
gave
take
the
5 or 6 months. Is that what would normally be? What is the normal length of time it would take to remove? Right.
Well,
I suppose it depends on how long the railroad is, isn't it?
Depending on where you're at, in our particular section, we are in the Midwest, and if you're
it's winter,
allowed to have a. You will be in your regular construction season.
Ms. Keating, I'm a little puzzled.
Are you suggesting that the Minnesota shippers who went before the ICC are simply the same people in another guise as Hayfield? Is that right?
Counsel for appellants have indicated that they're separate legal entities. However, the principals, some of the principals and incorporators...
I'm trying to get your position. So I understand you say they're the same, really the same people.
Yes, sir.
And you're saying they had an option under the abandonment procedure under the Staggers Act. And once having availed themselves of that, which they did, and getting a valuation with which they were dissatisfied, they were, what, stopped, somehow barred by preemption doctrine of going into the state courts?
They had the ability to have that valuation appealed.
What I'm trying to get is your position. Is that having gone into the ICC and got an evaluation under the ICC procedures, under the Staggers Act, an evaluation with which they were not satisfied because they didn't appeal it. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And are you saying, in consequence, having taken advantage of the federal procedure, they are somehow a stop part, somehow, from going into state court?
We believe it would be a collateral attack against that final order of the commission that set the valuation of the line at 1.79.
And that's why you say this is an interference with the preemption doctrine, isn't it?
That, and in addition, under Section 10905, which was invoked in the section in the Staggers Bill Act of 1980, there was another provision. It not only set the time periods in which these offers were to be made as far as a forced sale or subsidy, it also provided that anyone that purchased the line should continue service for a minimum of 2 years. That was an extra stiff requirement as to continued service, and we believe it evinces the congressional intent for there to be stability in the rail system and that for there to be continuity. So Section 10905 regulated that entire area, and there is no indication.
Well, if they had never taken advantage of 10905, if that had not happened, all they had done was what they've since done, organize to start a new railroad. Would you be making the same preemption argument?
Yes, I would, Your Honor. We believe that there is a notice that's put in the Federal Register, a notice stating anyone who is interested in subsidizing...
Has to go that route.
Yes.
Of course, the problem is the ICC does not agree with you on that.
Well, Your Honor, there is a difference of opinion, as I understand it, among the commission members, and they did not join the Solicitor General in his brief and have not entered the case as a party of record. But I think that we should note that the commission...
With the papers that are before us, the ICC does not agree with you.
There is some difference of opinion among their decisions. They have indicated that they understand what opportunity costs are and that there's a real cost to the railroads in terms of not being able to use their assets productively.
May I decide what I think it says?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Well, I take it your colleague on the other side agrees that if it were clear enough in the ICC's disposition of the abandonment proceeding that it was the abandonment was conditioned upon or rested upon the use of the rail elsewhere on the line, that this would be a different case.
Well, one of the findings that's made in every abandonment case now is the opportunity costs associated with not being able to productively use one's assets. So there was a specific finding in the commission proceedings. And while the certificate
on the other side says whatever kind of a finding there was, it isn't sufficient to foreclose the use of condemnation of the rail.
We would submit that there are sufficient findings in the administrative
and the ICC comes along and says, well, whatever we found, we certainly didn't intend to foreclose condemnation of the rail immediately after the certificate issued. And it says we certainly didn't contemplate insulating this rail for any period of time from condemnation.
We believe,
and so you disagree with the ICC as to the meaning of its order.
I believe that the order was one, and the Congress is the one that has established that any forced sale or acquisition of a rail line, an intact rail line for continued rail purposes, should be done under Section 10905.
Well, you don't have an intact rail line.
Yes, which it was when the Hayfield Northern obtained its temporary restraining order in state court. The ICC, we believe, cannot abdicate its role as a guardianship over the railroad's financial condition. And I think it's important to note the primary purposes behind the Staggers Rail Act, which provided for Section 10905, and that was to deregulate the railroad industry and to provide lesser regulatory restraints, but it also to give the railroad an opportunity to have the earnings, adequate earnings, so that it could restore and maintain its rail systems and thus provide better rail service for the nation. And then finally, to provide for stability in the rail system of the nation. And Section 10905, as a result, was a balancing test to provide this means by which, within a certain time period, local communities could have the opportunity of acquiring a line and being able to continue service. But at the same time, there could not be this protracted delay from letting the railroads reuse their assets productively elsewhere.
Mr. Abdalion.
If there's a reasonable time in which the rail ties and track should be left intact or not intact, or in which the CNW could remove the rail ties, that should have been asked to the commission should have been asked to put a condition on the abandonment, and that's where that should have been fought out. The railroad did not have a condition to the abandonment that they needed the lines and they had to put it elsewhere. The reason that there was no condemnation action or petition condemnation action brought was because immediately upon seeking the TRO in state court, the issue was removed to federal court on a preemption issue, which was perceived as a threshold issue, and that to bring a condemnation action in state court while this threshold issue had to be decided would be premature and would have it likely not to be entertained by the state court in any event pending the resolution of this jurisdictional issue. As for the estoppel argument of the CNW, the estoppel would not prevent the condemnation. At most, it goes to the price that was placed on the line. It's an issue preclusion consideration, and not one of preemption. Thank you,
counsel. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next.